you want to increase your top line revenue, you might find latent demand for products that you didn't know exist that AI uncovers for you. And then you're like, oh, new product, right? That's an example of it's something new, it's something different, it's creative, it's going to drive business value.
Welcome to Leading the Shift, a podcast from Microsoft Azure, where we hear from the people at the forefront of data, AI, and cloud technologies. I'm your host, Susan Ettlinger.
So I have a real treat for you today. This is a conversation with Maribel Lopez. And if you don't know Maribel, she is who you need in your corner if you are a technology leader and you're trying to understand what is going on in this platform shift. So Maribel's the founder and CEO of Lopez Research. She is tremendously, tremendously skilled and knowledgeable, not only in cybersecurity and AI and customer experience and all of these different areas, but she's somebody who has this really clear and plain-spoken way of conveying very complex technology change. And so she's somebody that I go to when I have questions that I'm frankly too embarrassed to ask anybody else in public. But it's not just me. It is founders and CEOs of companies from the tiniest startups to the largest organizations in the world. So we're going to talk today about what is going on in the platform shift, because her unique perspective from all of the conversations that she has, and also the platform shift she has seen before, including cloud, including mobile, really equip her to kind of look at this and see what's a little bit different, what's a little bit the same, and most importantly, what should we all be doing? So Maribel, welcome to Leading the Shift. It's so great to have you here.
Hey, Susan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for doing this.
I'm excited to be here.
It's awesome. It's awesome. So you and I have known each other forever, so we won't, you know, go into that in too much gory detail. But I think that it would be really nice for our listeners to hear a little bit about like your journey and how it is that you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I started my career in finance and I wanted to be in strategy, but I didn't really know what that meant. But over the course of time, I worked for several vendors and I was helping them basically understand the technology shifts, you know, what was being announced, how that was going to impact the industry, how it was going to impact their business. And really, that's how I ended up in my market research career. And that's how I ended up at Lopez Research, founding Lopez Research to help companies deal with technology change and, you know, basically link technology to business value. And here we are today, you and I talking about leading the shift, right?
It's perfect. It's perfect. It feels like a complete circle. So we've known each other a really long time. And I was actually trying to figure out when it was we first met. And then I stopped trying. But I do remember being in a conference room for a client and you were also there as an analyst. And I remember you walked in the room and you sat down and with this very calm, collected demeanor, you just unpacked their entire business. And I was rapt. And I thought, hey, I mean, it was really one of those moments for me where I was like, I want to do that when I grow up. And and so it's so wonderful to have you here. You know, now, of course, I'm at Microsoft. You founded Lopez Research. How many years ago now?
17.
Oh, my goodness.
I can't even believe it myself. It's been a long time.
Wow.
So we've known each other a long time.
Yeah.
Put it to you that way. Yeah, a long time.
And in that first room, you know, actually, I do remember what the topic was. We're talking about how employees, oh, my God, this feels like ancient history, how employees were bringing their phones to work. And how that was creating such a mess for the enterprise. And then, so that was a big part of it, right? It was that big mobile shift. What does mobile mean in the enterprise? Is it an asset? Is it a liability? Is it a combination? What does that look like? And so, you know, here we are now. And I think, you know, one of the benefits of doing something like this is that you get a chance to reflect. And, you know, a lot of people I speak to say this platform shift feels different from what's come before. And I would love to just get your perspective on that. Like, does it feel different to you?
Sure. If I could describe it in a word, it's fast.
Mm-hmm.
It has, and speed has dimensions. So One dimension of speed is in terms of how fast the technology is being innovated. I've never seen so many innovations happen so quickly, and so exponentially. So that's the first dimension I think is different about this shift. But the one that's actually equally interesting, because we could always say that technology was moving fast and it gets faster, speed of adoption, very different than anything I've ever seen before. It's faster than mobile. It's faster than cloud. You know, when I look at cycles that we've seen before, we could argue that AI has been around for a very long time, decades, right? But I would say that certain shifts in AI happen very, very quickly. Like the generative AI shift happened within several years, as opposed to 7 or 8 years, 10 to 15 years, which is when you look at some of the other shifts. The third thing I would say is the level of importance, the speed and the level of recognizing how important the shift was unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, AI strategy is a board level discussion in organizations. And that has not happened since we did the big move to the what I've called the e-move, you know, the e-commerce, everybody had an E in front of their title at that point, right? Yeah. Remember those years where it was all about the E? Eventually the E went away and it just became, you know, commerce again, and we became digital. But that was the last time we had that, like, oh my God, we got to do this. This is just really happening. Everything else, in some ways, like when we went to cloud, people are like, cloud is great. But, you know, we had to pull them along for a little bit. When we went into mobile, they're like, mobile is great. But, you know, we still had to pull them along and try to get them out of putting little thing, you know, an entire app on like a 2-inch screen. It just didn't work well. Right. So it seemed like it was a lot harder to get those going. So this shift does feel different in terms of the speed, the adoption, the considered importance across organizations of every size.
Yeah, it's funny.
That's the other issue.
I see that too, speaking with folks like you, speaking with analysts. Like, I remember, you know, back in the sort of the early days of SaaS, which was quite a long time ago, having to make a case about, you know, you could actually move these things to the cloud. And if you move them to the cloud, or we weren't really calling it to the cloud, but, you know, if we move them to the cloud, then you can do all these other things with it. And people were like, we're never moving our data to the cloud. Like that, are you nuts?
Kicking and screaming.
Kicking
I remember
screaming.
That.
Yeah. And people call it, Jessica Hawk calls it cloud adversity. Yeah, it's a different thing, not only with sort of companies, but with analysts too. Like analysts are now, they're not arching the eyebrow. They're like, you know, I mean, if there's skepticism, it's skepticism about the how, not about the if. And so that's been a really interesting thing. And, you know, it reminds me, so there was this conversation that I had on another episode with Ade Famoti, who is heads up our, if I get this wrong, please forgive me, but our Microsoft Research Accelerator. So he's working on incubations. And one of the things that he says is that this feels like AI's physics moment. And what he means is that moment when, you know, Einstein kind of like upended everything that people believed about the way that the world works. And, you know, if you go back to, like, for example, you think about something like steel. Steel's been around for centuries. But until you could mass produce it, in the early part of the 20th century or the late part of the 19th century, actually, you couldn't do things like create cars or skyscrapers. And you couldn't create a skyscraper until you had steel. And you couldn't have steel until you could mass produce it in sheets. And so there are all these knock-on effects that happen. And, you know, people say, and this is true, we're in the early days, but like, one thing I think is really interesting is that there seems to be a lot more emphasis on people understanding, trying to figure out, how do we do this right this time?
Right. Totally true. Totally true.
So what do you hear? You know, you work with like Fortune, I don't know, double digit companies. Like, what do you hear from them? What are the concerns that they have or the questions that they have? Are they like still getting on board? I mean, it feels like that's not the case.
You know, if speaking to the fast, if we had this discussion a year ago, we'd be having a very different discussion than we are today, maybe even 6 or 8 months ago. So I think everybody realizes that there's been a tremendous amount of investment in the AI space and that the AI space is, in fact, real. So they don't question the reality of it. What they question are things like the deployability of it. Like, is it fully baked? Because it seems like it's moving really fast. How far and how fast should I take this? There's a lot of discussion about, like, I don't want to get over my skis on it, but I don't want to be left behind. There is a real considered concern around what does the tech stack look like for AI? Is it the same tech stack I had with stuff added to it? Is it a different tech stack? You know, particularly as we start moving towards things like agentic, they're like, is like, this has changed my software development. Like, I don't know what's going on here. Am I still using the same SaaS services? Am I using something else? Right. So there's a lot of confusion around not if AI is going to happen, but how AI happens. And so that's where I spend a lot of my conversations. You know, what do you have? What are you trying to do? I think you and I have spoken in the past a lot about this discussion, but sometimes we get really enamored with the technology as opposed to the outcome. So now we're starting to see organizations that have spent a long time in the past year, year and a half, like testing things. One of the big disconnects between this and other things that we've seen in the past, like if we go back to mobile or cloud. The way people approach mobile and cloud was a little different than the way people approached AI. So let me explain what I mean by that. When we went into a lot of the other technical shifts, we really focused a lot on replicating what we had in a newer technology. You know, we used to talk at cloud a lot about this concept of lifting and shifting. You know, we're going to move it over here, right? So that was one of the things we did. We had long proof of concepts, long deployment cycles, 3 to 5 year plans, right? What we ended up with at the end that was sort of interesting and different and not exactly what we expected is maybe we thought we're going to get cost savings, but what we really got was flexibility.
Yeah.
What we really got was the ability to rapidly innovate, right? So the outcomes were a little different than we expected. So when we came into this AI journey, the AI journey was different because we started with the concept that AI could be different. And so the proof of concepts were just kind of wild. Mm-hmm. They were like, what do we do? What's like, what could we do? What does it do? Let's see what we think it could do, right? And that was great, and it was interesting, and we got data out of it. But at the end of the day, we didn't get it to tie back to the business value and the outcomes that we were looking for. So now we've sort of, you know, gone from the 180 sort of back to the middle to say, okay, we know that AI can be different. We know the goal is not necessarily to replicate what we had before. But the goal is still to use AI to create the business outcomes that we had been discussing in the past. So, for example, it's 2025 and you decide your business outcome is to improve Net Promoter Score, to drive top line revenue growth of 10%, to create a secure and resilient supply chain. Like, you have different KPIs depending on what your business is. And now you're like, okay, we need to figure out how AI can impact those. And so I think we're in a good space with AI now because we want to tie it to business value, but we're not actually just trying to replicate something we did before. Uh-huh. We're trying to improve something tremendously. And I think that's a great space to be in.
Yeah, yeah.
Complicated space, but a great space.
It is. And it feels even more complicated because the models are just getting better and better so quickly. Like, I remember, I don't know how many years ago when it came out, reading Kevin Kelly's The Inevitable. You know, it was like the 10 yes. things that are going to change your life kind of thing. Self-help for technologists. And one of them was AI. And that was at a time, I remember reading it and people were like, oh, AI, come on, like, that's so over. And I
kept, so never happening. That discussion,
you know, and what he would, and what he said was, and you know, of course, this has come up in a lot of different contexts, but what he said was, you know, you sort of need three things. You need plentiful data. You need inexpensive or at least accessibly priced compute power, and you need, you know, improving algorithms. And at the time, I thought, well, I'm, you know, feeling all smart, right? I'm like, well, once you get the data and you get the compute, then of course, the algorithms are going to get better faster and faster. And that's true. That's happening, right? With all the model innovation that's happening. But of course, you know, not all these levers are moving in the same direction. And the pace of change is so fast that, like, you know, okay, any question that begins with what should we do? My answer had always been when I was back on your side of the fence, you know, like start with your business problem. But generative AI is so accessible and it's changing so fast that the opportunity space, or at least the art of the possible, is always shifting too. And that's such a weird balance, right?
Yeah. I think people spend a lot of time trying to figure out what that balance looks like for them and how edgy they are as a company. But I think I want to circle back to something that you said earlier, because I think it's really important. None of these are isolated islands. And the more of a specific tech island you get going, the better the outcome can be. So for example, mobility wouldn't have been what it was without cloud computing. AI couldn't really be accessible to organizations without cloud computing. And then when you put all three of them together, along with some innovations in chips, you get the ability to do AI on devices anywhere that leverages cloud services, which then means you can start to fundamentally rethink what the experiences are at the edge of the network, in the cloud, just anywhere, right? In cars, in planes, in shop manufacturing floors, and in retail institutions. There's like so many places that we can change business now, but it's as the result of leveraging multiple tech stacks at the same time that reinforce each other. And I think that's super powerful when people are thinking of building strategies. You know, how do these things interlock? And then, you know, how will some of them change? I do think that we're starting to see a change in how software is thought of, built, deployed, sure. And that will accelerate. I think we're embedding more AI into everything. Like right now, we really think of AI as a separate thing. And, you know, Susan, you and I lived through this shift when we went into mobile. Mobile was a discrete thing for many years. Yeah. And then really seemingly overnight, one day we woke up and it just shifted and everybody said, oh no, it's just part of everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel that that's what's happening with AI, but at a more accelerated pace. Yeah. It's, you know, every vendor I talk to now has something going on with AI, and it almost equates to intelligence. You know, if you want to build intelligent services from this point forward, you're going to have some AI component to them. So that's an extremely powerful shift that I think is happening in the industry. But I'm always concerned with, you know, I still think that there are a lot of misconceptions in the field, right? So when people talk about Gen AI, when they talk about agentic, when they talk about cloud, you know, normally I would have said people aren't moving fast enough, but I think people, you know, organizations are moving faster than they've ever moved. So I'm not going to give them grief for that. But I do try to talk to people about, hey, generative AI isn't the only type of AI, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Your organization is going to have a mixture of AI. Some of it's going to be deterministic. Some of it's going to be probabilistic. So some of it more traditional machine learning, like all the way through generative and then into agentic. I think people are confused by how much or how little AI can do on its own without an individual.
So, or should, right?
Or should, right? The should is a really interesting question, mm-hmm. but the can is the one they're a little wrapped around at the moment. So I would say to organizations, hey, AI isn't going to write all of your software code. You're still going to need software programmers, right? It's not going to replace all of your marketing and your social media team. AI is still an augmentation technology, right? And you have to think about it that way. And the power of it is in thinking about it in the augmentation manner, right? What how it can help accelerate, but not just in a productivity way, but in a newer, more creative, interesting way, but then also in a better foundation. Like, nobody ever documented code before. It was complex, time-consuming, wasn't considered a value add, but now you can have AI do that.
Yeah.
And you're focusing more on the code, right? And it can help you test your code, and you can write better code as a result of that. And if you're a mediocre coder, you can be a solid coder. If you're a great coder, you can be a phenomenal force for the business. So this is the type of discussions I've been having with people to try to get over some of the misconceptions of what AI is and isn't in an organization.
Yeah. No, I mean, it can fulfill many roles, right? You know, if you think back to even like the adversarial network approach, right, where you're using, yes, we're using AI to, you know, to try to test AI, or you're thinking about automated evaluation or all these different ways that, or using AI, generative AI, to go sort of interrogate your data estate and figure out where your data is and what it is and what you can learn and what you can reason over. Like, those are all really interesting things. And it is a different kind of thinking about what the possible is, which, I feel like that, you know, I mean, sometimes I think like, okay, if we look back 20 years, like, what are all the bets we should have made aside from the investments we should have made? What are all the bets we should have yes. made, you know, as organizations or as advisors to organizations or employees? And, you know, some of those things, like maybe we were the voice in the dark, you know, if you're lucky, maybe you were that voice in the dark saying we should do this. And then somebody takes that advice and does something amazing with it. And then you look back and you think, what are the things we completely missed? And I always wonder that with AI. I always wonder, like, what are we missing? Especially because the terms that we're using and the technologies are moving almost daily, it feels like.
I think people worry a lot in general about what they're missing. They worry about it from an opportunity standpoint, from a risk standpoint. So I think the way that we're trying to get people over this problem is you almost don't know what you can do until you start doing something. You just, this is not an exercise that works so well where you just try to plan everything out, because the technologies don't necessarily work exactly the way you think they're going to. They don't necessarily give you exactly the outputs you think they're going to give you. There's a lot of experimentation to make it better, a lot of opportunity to make it better. We laugh about prompt engineering. It just, even the fact that it's called prompt engineering says that we're still a little early in that cycle.
What would you call it?
Well, it's like, how do you question AI to
ask better
get the
questions.
Information
yeah.
you
need? Yeah.
You need, right? How do you create scenarios that programs and models can execute to deliver you better insight, better business value, right? There. So that's an art and a skill. And you just don't know how far you can push it until you jump in and start doing things, right? And so this gets back to, from an organizational standpoint, not every organization is great at an experimentation model. It's not part of their corporate culture. There's a lot of fear around failure. And the nice thing about AI is that I think everybody goes to the dark side of, you know, how bad it could be. But there's actually a lot of positives in the sense that, you know, you can fail at a query and then just write another one, right? And you can just keep doing it. And it operates very quickly. It's not like the old days where you ran a query, you went away, you had a coffee, maybe you went home overnight and came back the next day to see what the answer was. It's like you ask an AI model a question and boom, you pretty much have a, you know, fairly near instantaneous answer. And if it's not the right answer, or if it's not what you were looking for, you have a lot of opportunity to change things. So I think there's, until you really dig in and get your hands dirty and start using AI, it's hard for you to imagine the art of the possible. But once you get to the, oh, it does this well, or oh, it does that well, then you start doing the, I wonder if it can do this. And like you start to have this free your mind exercise and just see what happens. And I think that is the most powerful unlocking concept we've had in my lifetime, that the ability for the average person, and when I say average, I mean non-technically savvy person, to be able to leverage technology to this extent is amazing. I mean, I spent years in finance trying to learn Excel commands so that I could unlock the power of the software. And now I can just ask it to do something and it's almost anticlimactic. I'm like, do you know how many years it took me to learn how to do that when I was younger?
There's your sunk cost.
Gosh darn it. Years of my experience rendered worthless in, you know, 1 month or so, right? With a few updates with Copilot. So, you know, it's interesting how much it's changed.
You know, that's interesting. And it makes me wonder, though, like, because so much of this is, you know, a test and learn culture, or relies on sort of understanding the difference between probabilistic and deterministic types of applications and technologies. You can say test and learn. We can understand there's a creativity space. We can kind of make time for the fact that we're learning as we go, and all of those things that we tell ourselves. But like at the end of the day, you're working with organizations that have quarterly, you know, some of them have quarterly earnings, quarterly reporting, they have budgets, they have constrained resources, and they have OKRs or KPIs or what have you that they have to meet. So how do you counsel them?
The experimentation can't be viewed as a weird science project, right? I'm just trying to see if I could build a robot to make me coffee. Like, okay, that would really work for me. I love coffee so much. If I had a really good coffee robot, I'd be super happy. I'd be over-caffeinated, but super happy. But from the organizational standpoint, if the question is, I need a secure, resilient supply chain, then your experimentation is around, well, what can AI do to solve that? Can it actually automatically go out and evaluate providers? Can it evaluate pricing? You know, you start to ask those kinds of questions and see what you get back. If it's to improve your net promoter score, well, then you're like, well, let's take, you know, what used to be a really bad experience with chatbots and try to figure out how do we make virtual agents that can actually answer questions for customers, or just get them to the right customer service rep faster, or to automate a bill credit, right? So there's a lot of opportunity to say, okay, can the tech do this? And if we take a customer service example, the tech might be very good at doing a password reset. The tech might be good at understanding if you have an internet access problem. The tech might not be very good about getting you on the right flight at the right time for the right price point, right? And then maybe you want to talk to a person, but you can compress the whole cycle of how fast that happens and what the outcome is, and even predict what some of the discussion might need to be to make that experience better and faster. And that's when you start to see, you know, maybe in the short run, it's minor improvements, but in the longer run, it's a major improvement. Back on that, if you can look for use cases where AI can make it, you know, that 1% better that we've been talking about, that starts to compound over time, very powerful. But if you don't start with a question that's going to add business value, you're really just spinning your wheels and spinning your money. And so every organization I speak to now is looking for, you know, across the company. And this is what's so powerful. It's not just in one group or another group, like in IT operations, can we make the IT work better? Can we make the service desk work better? Can we help people get information faster in HR? Like, there's so many areas where you can just pick one scoped use case in several areas in your company and show enough impact within a short enough period of time that you can get more budget to do more and build larger strategies. But you really have to anchor it in something that the company cares about today and show how it's going to deliver value. And then eventually you can get to more interesting experimental things. Like even the experimental things, I still think they start in places that you know they're going to drive business value. For example, you want to increase your top line revenue. You might find from data either in your service desk or in your marketing promotions or other things, you might find latent demand for products that you didn't know exist that AI uncovers for you. And then you're like, oh, new product, right? That's an example of it's something new, it's something different, it's sort of creative, but it didn't, you know, it started in a certain place. And you could see how it evolved. But it wasn't the, I wonder if we should, you know, build this model just to see if we can build a model, or how hard it is to build a model, or how fast you can build the model, right? So there's like a lot of things, you know, most people don't have the time and energy for that anyway, unless they're a certain level of company that has more of a research and experimentation group. So I think everybody's starting to take a much more pragmatic approach to it this year.
Yeah. I mean, but what you're saying, I mean, if I'm understanding correctly, is that maybe the new pragmatism is just asking better questions, right, about the business. It's just trying to understand, like, what are the levers that are going to move the business in a direction that we want to move it, whether it's efficiency, whether it's customer experience, whether it's risk mitigation, whether it's net new revenue, you know, all those things. I think it's a culture shift, though, to think about those, that kind of question answering. And here I'm not talking about prompt engineering as a specific discipline, but that kind of like orientation toward asking better questions as a sort of a new cultural currency in organizations.
I think that we always had the appetite for it, but we never had the ability to execute. So let me tell you what I mean by this. You know, there was, in previous iterations, you know, we talked about the low code, no code. And the idea behind low code, no code was that there were many people in the organization that had great ideas that they couldn't technically easily execute. And that there was such a backlog for the technical teams to execute on the things that were considered high value at that time, that those other ideas were never going to come to life unless we provided some technology like low code, no code. And that worked great. And it perhaps did not deliver as big and as outsized value as we wanted because, you know, maybe I didn't want to use a low code, no code tool as an individual. But conceptually, I think that was the idea we had. The big idea we had at that time was like, how do we allow everybody in the organization to unlock their ideas, to use the technology to unlock their ideas? Now I think the idea is, well, if we give them the right AI tools, they'll be able to figure out the things they need to figure out. And then the question is, what do we do with that insight? And that gets back to your point where I think we're rapidly getting to the point where anybody in the organization can figure out something interesting. And then it becomes an exercise of maybe you have a cast of thousands of ideas. And
right.
How do you
then
actually
win
those?
Then you have to do the innovation management of it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but I do think that we're making it so much easier for people that have ideas to explore them, to come up with new ideas, to reframe them, to collaborate with other people on them. So that's the other thing we haven't spoken about. I mean, there's been a tremendous innovation in the collaboration space as well, which is another one of those tools that when you add that with cloud and with AI, we can start to really accelerate that development process. So I'm really excited about where it could go. But I think, Susan, what you're really getting at that's so important and one of the biggest issues organizations have is, hey, you can buy all the technology on the planet, but oftentimes the issue is not the technology. It's a change management.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not willing to change your processes as an organization to leverage that, it doesn't matter. If you don't have executive backup for it, doesn't matter. So there's a lot of organizational things that have to happen in addition to the technology for the technology to be adopted and leveraged in the right way.
Yeah. But of course, you know, you still need the platform and you still, you know,
right.
for the capture, right? So because ultimately right. you have to have a place for all of this to land and combine and, you know, and create that foundation for whatever that next, the answer, the potential answer that is sitting there for the question that might be asked, you know, in 20 minutes or 20 years. And that to me, it feels like a flywheel being built even as we speak, you know? So, all right. Well,
now that we've gone through that.
Now, yeah, really, what else is there to talk about? So I just want to kind of conclude with something that I ask everybody, which is kind of the advice, you know, the sort of, and you can put it, you can cast it in technical terms or in human terms and leadership terms, whatever it is, but like, what's the thing that you always either tell people or wish that you could tell people about how to think about what we're doing right now?
Okay, there are a couple things. So in certain ways, while we have a great, amazing technology, a lot of things we're trying to do are similar to things we've done in the past. But B, a lot of the problems that we've had are similar to what we've had in the past that, you know, AI doesn't fix, at least not right away. And one of those problems is that data fuels AI. So bad data means bad AI. And this is both, you know, you have to look at your internal sources of data and you have to look at the external sources that you're using and make sure that they're clean data, the right data. They might have to be synthetic data so that you can represent the world that you want to be representing. That data challenge it's been a challenge for some time. And we've gotten better tools for it, but that challenge is actually more meaningful in an AI world. So I spent a lot of time talking to people about, well, we've run off and done all these great like AI POCs, but are we using the right data? Do we know that? How do we know that? So I think it's really important that people look at their data. It's so boring. It's probably the most boring thing I could tell people, but it is the thing that time and time again, people get wrong.
Yeah.
Best intentions, but the data really ruins them.
Yeah.
We already talked about the use cases tying to your key KPIs. We've already talked about change management. So I think two of the other technical things that, and these are a little more technical, but really important, is making sure that you have thought of the concept of securing AI. There's a lot of AI-specific threats that we have to look at. There's a lot of data threats. So there's a whole category of tools for AI security. And sometimes people get really enamored with like the large language model and they forget about the AI security. So then the thing that also goes hand in hand with that is, how do you govern AI? What is your governing stack and what are the tools that you use for governance and compliance? And this is one of those things where it's sort of like maintaining your foundation. It's not sexy, but nothing is really going to work without it moving forward. So, you know, nobody ever loved network management, but they needed it. And this is one of those things.
It's sexy to get a good night's sleep, right? You know, like
it is.
The ability to sleep at night knowing that your data is secure.
You can tell we're older because we care about a good night's sleep.
I do care about sleep.
I do. But it's true. You can't, as an organization, sleep well at night if your data hasn't been secured and governed, because you have both regulatory privacy and brand reputation risk, right? Nobody wants to lose a bunch of data. Nobody wants to have bad outcomes from their models because they weren't secured appropriately. So there's a lot of risk that we can take off the table if we look at those two topics, the security and the governance, at the beginning of building AI, because it's kind of hard to layer them on nicely afterwards. They're much better if you do it at the beginning. So if you make sure you're taking care of your data prep at the beginning, you're taking care of your security and your governance at the beginning, the whole thing is just going to work a lot better. So those are the things that I really try to make sure that people understand are just, you know, non-negotiable core parts of your strategy.
Well, thank you. And I mean this literally, I couldn't have said that better myself. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining, for just chatting it over. Next time we'll have to do it over coffee, but promise me it'll be in the morning, because if it's at night, then I
Absolutely.
Will not sleep.
Right.
Governance be damned, right?
You have many great coffee shops, so I look forward to seeing you soon.
Me too. Thanks, Maribel. Okay, so here are a few things I think are really important to highlight. The first thing is, it's not your imagination. The speed of change is really so much faster. But Maribel thinks of speed in three dimensions. The first is the speed of innovation. The second is the speed of adoption. And the third is the speed of recognition that what's happening today is really important. As she says, AI strategy is now a board-level discussion. And there's so much goodness in Maribel's advice about your technology foundation, from your data to your security posture to your governance stack. But I'll cherry-pick one point. The data challenge is actually way more meaningful in an AI world. Why? Because data fuels AI. So to paraphrase, bad data fuels bad AI. And finally, jump in. You've heard this before, but there's a twist. The nature of this technology is that you almost don't know what you can do until you start doing something. So go ahead, start exploring. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. And as I'm sure you know, new podcasts live and die on engagement. So please like, comment, share, tell your friends, and let us know what you'd like to hear about. We're listening. If you'd like to learn more about how people and organizations are innovating with Microsoft Azure, visit azure.microsoft.com. The Leading the Shift podcast is a place for experts to share their insights and opinions. As students of the future of technology, Microsoft values inputs from a diverse set of voices. That said, the opinions and findings of our guests are their own, and they may not necessarily reflect Microsoft's own research or positions. Leading the Shift is a production of Microsoft Azure. I'm your host, Susan Ettlinger. Our executive producers are Haley Meehan, Aaron Russell, Eric Williams, and me. Production support provided by the incredible team at Indigo Slate.